Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Games premier podcasting trio. My name is JW Crewall, and I am joined today by my co-host, Andrew Mahone. Andrew, how's it going today?
I'm doing fantastic, JW. I've been working real hard all week, preparing for LAIC next week. Got to plan a couple local events here. I could tell your voice a little raspy today, which is why we're recording later in the week, allowing you some time to heal up. So what's going on with you, my friend?
Yeah, so I got sick on Saturday or Sunday of last week, and then I just had like a runny nose, got a little congestion, and then that all kind of went away about Monday or Tuesday, but then I just was unable to speak for basically the entire week. It happened, I think, like Monday evening, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I like literally spoke no louder than, I don't know, you know, a quarter volume. And then here we are. I still sound like, you know, the woman from, you ever watch Flea Market Flip?
No, but you sound like a chain smoker, man. Like,
I sound like a chain smoker. I sound like Laura Spencer. For all my,
I don't know who that
all
is.
My married men and ladies who are listening, Flea Market Flip, great show.
There you go.
But anyway, so we're here, we're pushing through, and we finally get to record the cast a couple days late.
Yeah, it's all good. Riley, of course, is on location working. He travels all over the place for his job. He's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a big deal in the workplace, you know, doing things. He's out in California right now, so we're missing him this week, but that's okay because, I mean, we got enough personality to go around, don't we, JW?
That's right. We don't need him. I mean, we do need him, but we'll get by.
We do. We definitely do. Yeah.
so we got a lot to talk about. I mean, because we have – oh, you wanted to bring up something. I know. I can tell. You go for it.
No, I was going to say, LAIC, new format. Let's dig in. We're starting to break it down, and LAIC is going to be like the first real big tournament. And we're starting to see...
Yeah, as opposed to all those other tournaments. Those are little fake, tiny little...
What, online tournaments?
Insignificant. Oh, the first real tournament in the new format.
Yeah.
I thought you're talking about the first real tournament this season.
No, in the new format. Look, how insecure are you?
I'm not insecure. I'm not.
How
I
insecure? You want a big regional, man, just because I'm not talking about it.
Hey, I feel like we should, you know, give it its due.
Doesn't mean
like
I forgot.
How could you?
How could I? It was magnificent. But yes, eyes are on LAIC now.
Yes, absolutely. And you're going.
I am.
The one representative.
I know. I'm going to be staying with Azul, Grant, Caleb, and Chip. And a buddy of mine, Joe, which is super funny. Joe is this local dude who I like a lot, and he's just like a kid from our local league, right? He's awesome. His girlfriend actually works at the shop here. And he like will, you know, he plays locally and has been to some regionals and stuff, but like is relatively a newer player. I want to say he's like 21, you know, and you know, he had hit me up originally and was like, yeah, I want to go to LAIC for sure. Like, I think I'm going to go, man. It's like going to be his first international tournament. And I was really excited. And I was like, all right, cool. Well, none of my friends are going. So like, you know, let's plan to go together. Like, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Cause
I like, you know, when you're going on these international trips, you need like a traveling buddy. You just do. Mm-hmm. So it's so we were planning on going together. But then he didn't get in. I mean, like the registration for LAIC just like dropped in the middle of the night, and I woke up at like 9:30 one day, cause I do that. On a weekday one day, and like I, you know, was scrolling Twitter and saw people talking about registration for LAIC, and was like
oh God. Shoot.
So I know, shoot. So like I hopped on and just started clicking, refreshing, and like I got in. Joe did not get in. So then I was like, all right, well, I don't know if Joe's going to get in because, like, maybe there's another wave or something, but I need to figure out a backup plan. So then I hit up Chip and was like, hey, are you going to LAIC? I was thinking maybe he's going to go to CAST or something.
Right.
But he was like,
playing?
Actually, yeah. He's like, I'm playing.
Gosh.
And I was like, oh, snap. Like, okay, well, you know, you got an extra spot. And he was like, well, they were kind of like bursting at the seams. You know, it was going to be like Chip, Grant, Caleb, and Azul, like all in a room with barely enough people. And like, I think they got another guy. So like, they were like at the point where they needed to get a second room anyway. So like, me coming in was like the catalyst to get a second room. And then like,
I see.
and I was like, and I got one more guy because Joe ended up getting in like the second or third wave or whatever.
That's great.
So then I was like, well, I got a buddy too. So like, you mind if we tag along? You know, so now we're all in, and Joe is like kind of starstruck. He's like, oh my God. He's like, I'm staying with it. I'm gonna
So
be
is it so it's two separate rooms. So confidentiality will be maintained.
No, it's two separate rooms. Like I'm in a room with I don't know. I haven't talked about that yet. I'm in
Okay,
a
I was
room
just
with
curious, like, would you guys be playing games together that week?
well,
'Cause
I figure that
you're going
I'm
like Tuesday
going
or something?
Tuesday. I think I'll get there Wednesday morning. But Joe's gonna be there Tuesday with them, without me, which is kind of sick.
That is cool.
I know. Yeah, so Joe's real excited. Joe left like today, actually. He's on a flight right now. It is Friday today at the time of recording. So he's like on his way because he had booked a non-refundable flight before he signed up for the event, bro. Before he signed up.
This guy is the main character.
I know, I know. So he was like, I'm going to Brazil regardless. I just
Good for
it's...
him.
So he's there right now, and I was like, yeah, man, I can't afford to stay a whole week. I just did this time in Japan and stuff. Like, I'm just kind of, you know, as much as I hate to say it, I'm kind of like flying
In
in
and
and
out.
flying out. Yeah, I mean, that's just what I'm doing this time around. So he's gonna be there, romping around by himself for a few
That's crazy.
I know, but it's gonna be fun. So the room is me, Chip, and Grant and Joe. And then I think the other room is like Azul and Caleb and his buddy, like another one of his buddies or something.
Gotcha.
So that's the group. Yeah.
That'll be fun.
That will be fun. 'Cause Chip is like a guest. It's funny how it all worked. 'Cause Chip is a guest star on like Azul's team. Whenever he decides to play, he's like in with them and like, and I've roomed with Azul and Caleb before. We did it for the first UIC after, you know, and obviously we're good buds and go back, you know. So like if I, you know, and Azul was sponsored by Full Grip for a year. So like if, you know, if you ever need to pull a favor, like I love those guys, you know, we got good rapport. So it's just like it's funny how Joe is like a random local from Akron is like now
Right in there with the elite.
he's geeked. He's really excited, which is a lot of fun. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, I hope you treat him right.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we're gonna initiate him. Yeah,
Well,
as
right.
yeah, into his first international experience.
I mean, yeah, Riley definitely has some stories about his time
Brazil. Yeah, he's the
in
only
Brazil.
one of our group who's been to LAIC, I think.
Yeah, man, I would love to go to internationals that are outside of the US. I think that would be just a highlight. I've never been to South America,
Yeah, me
so that
neither.
would be fantastic. Yeah, I hope you have a fantastic time. But there's a lot to talk about heading into the tournament. Obviously, like you've been doing a lot of testing on your stream, and you've been doing a lot of testing at your locals, and you're trying to figure it out. I have some opinions and thoughts, and I've also actually surprisingly touched a fair amount of cards since Toronto. So I'm excited to kind of share the thoughts that you have, that I have, and see where we agree and disagree.
Yeah. Well, I think I've been doing a lot of paper testing. I mean, just kind of trying to get like mentally caught up from where we were. Our last cast was talking about your regional win. We didn't delve into the meta too much, but there have been quite a few online tournaments that have happened since the release of the set, some with, you know, over 300 players, like the most recent late night event. There has been the Heavenly Kings invites to talk about, which was also
That
a big deal.
is important.
It is, right? Because for those of you that are unaware of the Heavenly Kings structure in Japan, it is kind of interesting. So I'll give you like a little, you know, I'll give you like the 30-second version of it. But there are four players who are known as the Heavenly Kings in Japan. They are used for all of the promotional material, interviews, advertisements, things like that to boost and bolster the Pokemon TCG in Japan. They are the faces of the Pokemon TCG when it comes to competitive Pokemon TCG in Japan. And every year, There are four. And then those four compete against the four best performing players from the previous year. And they have a little double elim tournament just for the eight of them. It's an invite tournament just for those eight. And the top four of that double elim event become the new Heavenly Kings. And then every year, so you'll have Heavenly Kings who have been Heavenly Kings for years, right? And who have held their spot for, you know, however long.
Yeah.
Who just kind of keep rolling into it, which is so sick. So you've got these players who are just like legendary status in Japan because they're on everything and have been for years. So it's a big deal. Half of the players for the Heavenly Kings tournament played Baxcalibur.
Yeah, because of course it was in the new format and they played Baxcalibur with Iron Hands.
Yes. And a couple of them grinded through. They all played Baxcalibur with Iron Hands, the Baxcalibur players. They all had Iron Hands in the Baxcalibur deck. The first player to grind through was a Charizard EX player with a really cool Toadscruel tech. And I have really liked that because the Toadscruel, not Toadscruel EX, Toadscruel, the single prize one that stops your opponent from getting cards back from their discard pile with their trainer cards. And that might sound narrow, but it was a perfect meta call for that invite because it means that your opponent can't play Superior Energy Retrieval to get back energy, and your opponent cannot get any cards off of Pokestop because if you read Pokestop, you discard the top three cards.
They go to the discard. Yep.
They go to the discard, then they come to your hand. So it was a genius call, which was really cool to see. And everybody in that event, you know, tech for Mew. There was one Mew player, so it was really interesting. But there was a Charizard list that came out of that, some Baxcalibur list that came out of that, and then the online events that we've been
Guardi
seeing.
List.
There was a Guardi list, yes, from the Heavenly Kings tournament. Guardi has continued to perform well, and I know that's a deck that you like a lot right now. But I think the other kind of big things that I've seen from online tournaments are that Fusion Mew is still very good. And
I agree.
And Snorlax Stall just coming out of left field. Here we go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for both of these decks being good. So for Mew, this is a perfect meta for a deck like Mew because the meta is so spread, the meta is so wide that it makes no sense on an individual basis for you as a non-Mew player to tech for Mew because the chances that you run into Mew are so slim and we all kind of, I mean, at least I think a lot of the decks in the format right now are very hit and miss with their consistency. I feel like we don't have, you know, you could argue from a ride on. That's what I did last format, arguing that was, you know, the most consistent deck.
Yeah.
But there are some factors that are kind of pushing that out now too. But with Mew, the meta is so wide open. There's probably about 10 decks that you could see reasonably at the top tables. And with that in mind, it really doesn't make a lot of sense with Mew being such a low meta share to tech for it, which makes it the perfect call for some players because the less text there are, the better you're going to do.
Yes, exactly. And in a wide open format where there are new decks and new strategies and people are trying out new combinations of cards, sometimes, and I actually got a really good question from, because I've been doing some paper testing with a lot of my locals, like Joe, you know, who I'm going to LAIC with, a couple of other, folks from local league. I've just been getting together with them and testing. And you know, they ask, you know, like, how do you decide a deck for a big event? And, you know, especially at the beginning of a new format, like, how do you actually decide? And one of the things that, you know, one of my philosophies is just, like, play a consistent deck. You know, don't, like, get lost in the sauce. Don't try to, like, you know, do something too crazy. You know, just if you could just play, like, a consistent deck for that first tournament out, you're going to be feasting on people who are trying out the new spice. Yeah, and don't quite have it down yet, right?
Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mew is just that deck embodied, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So there's a lot of validity to choosing Mew. And you know, the lists have been kind of like hammered out in the forge at this point. Like, I just picked up, you know, the most recent late night 300 player online tournament winning Fusion Mew list, and I was spinning it on stream today, and I was like, yep, this thing feels fire. Sure. Like, it's it.
I would play Mew. I would 100% play Mew at LAIC. It seems like a great, it's a tournament proven deck. You're not doing anything crazy. You know the matchups for the most part. I mean, and you know, like, okay, as long as I can dodge Charizard, you generally don't have, you know, at least I don't foresee there being a lot of Spiritomb or Drapion in the field at LAIC. And I kind of think that Roaring Moon is kind of fake.
All right, let's talk about that. Because, okay, I've had these feelings. I've had these feelings too. Is Roaring Moon fraudulent?
I think it's fake. I think it's a good deck. So I don't think, like, I think it hovers somewhere. I mean, I would put it at tier two. And I'm open to being very wrong about this. I am open to that. I'm inviting that even. But from my experience, the problem with Roaring Moon, and where I see it at LAIC is I see it being one of the most played decks and having one of the worst conversion rates because the game plan is so linear and you rely so heavily on going 2-2-2. And against decks that don't need to go 2-2-2, you have no game plan. You have no game plan against Gardevoir. As just an example, right?
Guardi's a
Of a
terrible
deck,
matchup.
you
Straight
have
up.
you know, a tough route to against Baxcalibur, if they can take those extra prizes, if they can, you know, do some snipe shenanigans and you know, get in with Baxcalibur and things. Like, it's really hard for the deck to make these big comebacks if you aren't able to knock out three Pokemon for your prizes. So I think that it is a fine deck. It's not a terrible deck, but I don't think that it's elevated itself to, you know, a tier one status that, you know, I really don't expect Roaring Moon to win the tournament. I just could not see it. I think, again, top eight, sure, but its conversion rate, I think, is going to be very poor at LAIC just because it's so linear.
And that's kind of exactly what I'm experiencing. I did play Roaring Moon at the Full Grip Games event this past weekend. There were like over 20 players, you know? I mean, and it there were over the winner was going to get over $100 of store credit. So it's like, you know, I mean, that's a little win a box, dude. I mean, straight up. So like, you know, the winner gets $100 store credit, yeah, whatever. That's pretty good. And our locals are good. I mean, you know, Jesse ended up winning 5-0 with Gardevoir. You know, and he's just kind of playing the tried and true Gardevoir slapped in a Screamtail or whatever and just let it ride. You know, I am more interested in like figuring out if Roaring Moon's real, right? Because I need to like figure out where these new decks stand so that I have a better grasp of like what I really think is going to be the top play at LAIC. And I played a turbo-ish Roaring Moon list. I want to say it was like kind of inspired by some of the Japanese lists and some of the lists like Grant Manley's list, which I disagree with completely, but like there's some ideas that Grant Manley was rocking with that I liked. The energy switches, the canceling cologne, you know, the Mew from Celebrations, which is a card that you were bringing up as well. And I have to apologize and say that you were correct about that. Because I was like, but no, it's good. It's real good.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you're playing the turbo item build,
Yeah, sure. Of
cross,
course.
if you're playing cross switchers, play that thing. Yep, 100%. You know, but I was playing like a turbo build with the energy switches and the water energy and the Radiant Greninja. I was trying that because I have a build with the ancient capsules and like that's more kind of like just a tanky, kind of maybe slightly chunkier, slower version with the Brute Bonnet, right? I have a version like that that is fine, and it plays like an Iono, and it plays like Boss's Orders, no cross switchers, and that list is fine. But I didn't feel like that list was a tournament winning list. So I'm like, all right, I don't think it's a tournament winning list, but that list is fine. So let's try out the cross switchers, the craziness, the energy switch, the Radiant Greninja, and let's see how that goes. And it's like, I mean, that list also clunks up in its own weird ways.
Yep.
And can run out of resources and is very, like, dependent on just running your opponent off the board with its first knockout. And if, like, God forbid, you don't just win the game with that first knockout, then you don't have much of, like, a game plan after that. You can, right. Sure, you could double cross switch or take a knockout, and you're probably going to take the first one. But if your opponent messes with you at all, like, you know, it might just not all piece together. And it feels like playing Maridon without the disruption.
That's the thing, right? Is that if you just let your opponent do, like, execute their game plan to a T every game, there's a lot of decks that can take advantage of that. And I think particularly about Gardevoir and Lost Box as being a couple matchups that I just really do not want to see. If I'm playing Roaring Moon, I don't really want to see those. Those are good one prize decks. They want to have huge hands with the current builds. You're not disrupting that. It just makes me wish that we had something like Reset Stamp in the format, like just an item card that you could play, You could get it back. I actually think the best Roaring Moon, this is another like hot take in terms of builds. I think the best Roaring Moon at LAIC is going to play a Darkrai, a 1-1 Darkrai. I've been really impressed with Darkrai in lists, and I think that's a card for the deck that helps in the late game, which is where you struggle the most.
I don't disagree with that. I actually 100% on board. I was trying that out on my stream today, actually. I didn't play the Darkrai at full grip, and I ended up, I beat a Baxcalibur deck, and I beat a Clawf Electro deck, which was also a very scary matchup. I beat those two, but then I also lost to a Chen Pao deck, and it was terrible. I mean, like, I went second and got the turn one double cross switcher knockout, but like I wasn't able to hit a dark patch, so I had to energy switch over to my Roaring Moon to take that knockout. But then my opponent just set up perfectly fine and like got a Chen Pao out and bopped my guy, right? So then I'm like, all right, I got to dig and find Seda, and I had to squawk away one of my Seda's turn one, so I only had two Seda left in the deck. I gear for it, I miss it, right? So then I stop because I have to hit double Dark Patch in order to attack this turn, and I stop, and I find the second Dark Patch, but I hit a Seda. Of course I do, right?
Yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, well, at least I've got everything I need to respond, so I respond, and then they, of course, cook up another knockout, no problem, and I'm like, okay, I need to find my final Seda, so I gear again. With the Seda, there's one Seda left in the deck. Can't find it. Okay, I stop, and I need to hit double Dark Patch in order to attack, and I only hit one. So it's like, I just didn't have the follow-up. I was, like, discarding Sedas when I didn't want to off stop. I wasn't hitting them off of gears. It's just like, you just need to draw your cards in the perfect order, have everything work out just right. And then Baxcalibur just so easily was just like, oh, yeah, boss, game. All
right. Yeah. And like, yeah. Right.
No problem.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But the Darkrai is sick, though. The Darkrai is sick. I'll give you that, because it allows you at the end of that game. If I had had the Darkrai set up, you know, I got
dark patch
cross switcher or, game
right.
over, right, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, because that's the thing, is like just maintaining the pressure throughout the game. Because I feel like with the Roaring Moon deck, and I don't know why people are playing three Roaring Moon, but that's another discussion, I guess. But you have a hard time streaming those attackers. Especially that third Roaring Moon, if your opponent can go through the first two, it's often, I've found, pretty hard, especially with disruption, to get that third Roaring Moon powered up. So I think the deck is a bit fake. I don't think it's a tier one deck. I think it will be among the most played, if not the most played at LAIC, because I think it's a fun, shiny new toy. I think it's really interesting as a concept in the game, but I think it's going to have a terrible conversion rate of, you know, those kind of upper echelon, you know, in terms of play, amount of play, decks in the format.
And I think that I was having a, I think that's a really good summation of it. I was having feelings like maybe Roaring Moon was kind of fraudulent, and then, you know, played it again on stream today with the Darkrai and like the cross switchers and everything. And I was like, this probably has felt like the best that it's felt. With the Darkrai giving you some sort of like late game, you know, you can get back an additional cross switcher, you can get back an additional dark patch, you know, whatever you need to like finish it out. Darkrai V-Star can do that. Even if you prize a piece, it doesn't matter, because you don't have to Darkrai V-Star until like the game winning play, and then you just go get it, right? So long as you set it up, you know, before your final knockout, you're probably fine. Yep. And but then I see, like, you know, Joe Omnipoke is on Twitter, right? And he's doing championship point conversions for you know, for decks that have been played, basically like the most successful decks, you know, in online events. The, you know, what's the most amount of, you know, credit, or what's the most amount of points that a deck has earned online, or that his deck has earned over in Japan. It's interesting. And Roaring Moon is the most.
Yes, like, obviously it is. Obviously. Yes, because, obviously it is. Because it's like in some of these tournaments, it's like double the amount of the second most played deck. So obviously it's going to. And it's a fun deck. And I don't hear me wrong. Yeah. I think it's a solid tier two deck, but I don't think that it has the ability to win a major tournament. I think it's, I mean, I guess a tier two deck by definition, like, could, right? It needs the tier
people
two.
People would argue
like,
that you did just that with Maraidon,
Well, sure, sure. And that's fine. Like, it needs the right metagame to be very successful. But I don't see Roaring Moon as having enough good matchups versus, I think, a slew of bad matchups. It just, I will, one last thing about Roaring Moon. I think we should move on.
Yeah, I agree. But there's a lot to talk about there because it's the, it is the big new bad. Yeah.
One thing I will say, and this is going back to the Heavenly Kings tournament, none of the eight players brought Roaring Moon. Yeah, and that's not, you don't, you know, obviously don't put a ton of emphasis on that, but don't you think it's kind of interesting? This new archetype comes out that's kind of prepackaged, that should be ultra turbo, ultra consistent. And none of Japan's best players decided to play it. I just think that's really interesting. I think that should tell you something. I think you can read into that if you want. Let's talk about another deck. I mean, I want to talk about Guardi. For me, that would be the choice. I think it would be a very easy choice. I think it would be a very simple choice to go with Guardi for LAIC because you're getting a ton of new tools. You get the Countercatcher, which I think is cracked in half, busted beyond belief for that deck to be able to play a worker and then also gust in the same turn. To be able to Iono plus gust and take a knockout with a one prizer. Need I say more? I think Gardevoir has a lot of things going for it. And you can even do Screamtail shenanigans. You can play the Luxurious Cape in there as well. One shot Pokemon on the bench with your Screamtail. I mean, I just don't see how Guardi isn't fighting, you know, a couple of spots in top eight, just all over the place in LAIC, because I think it gets a lot from the new set, particularly in Countercatcher, and then also Screamtails is pretty good for the deck.
My first impression of this format, and, you know, if you were watching the streams, then you know, I was saying, like, all right, Roaring Moon is, like, the big new bad, and Guardi smacks it. I mean, Guardi just destroys this thing. Roaring Moon's got literally no game plan for... It's got no game plan for Guardi, right? Guardi's going to set up. They're going to come at you with like a gigantic Shining Arcana Gardevoir. If you gust around that thing, then they're coming right back up. They're coming out with a huge
Gardevoir. They force you into a one prize game, right? They force you into the odd prizes. So
because they won't put, if you gust the Gardevoir EX, they won't put another one in play. They're just going to like leave some guys that can evolve into one if they need to for the game-winning play, and they're going to jam another Shining Arcana Gardevoir, and they're going to go 4-for-1 with that thing. It's just like you know, you can't beat that. They're going to go four. They're going to take, you know, if you ignore it, they're going to take four prizes with a single Shining Arcana Gardevoir, which is ridiculous. And with Countercatcher, they can make sure that that happens. With Iono, they're going to disrupt you at the end of the game when it matters most. I mean, with Screamtail, they don't even need to gust if they want to knock out a, you know, a Squawkabilly for game or something. It is obscene. And I think Gardevoir has a lot going for it. What makes me nervous about Gardevoir is like kind of the other, I see you shaking your head, but this is,
don't be nervous.
Listen, I know we don't, me and you, okay, we're aligned on this, and I get it, not fans of Chen Pao, but there are people who are.
There are.
And half of the heavenly, if I take your same exact logic that you used about Roaring Moon, and I apply it to Chen Pao, half of the Heavenly Kings chose to play Chen Pao Iron Hands. Half of them. Okay. Yep. And if there are Chen Pao fans out there, they are feeling very affirmed. The deck keeps showing up at online tournaments. It has Iron Hands. It is the best deck in the format at utilizing Iron Hands to take bonus prizes. It 100%. Seemingly has the best of both worlds. You can take bonus prizes on little guys. You can one-hit KO all the big guys. What more do you want? Why is Chen Pao Baxcalibur not the perfect deck?
I think Chen Pao has a lot going for it. Yeah, I think Chen Pao is fine. I would be very comfortable playing Chen Pao. I actually, a couple weeks ago, ordered my nice baby blue full art Chen Pao's. So I'm prepared for the Chen Pao future. I think Chen Pao's fine. It's a deck that at this point in time, I do favor Guardi a little bit more, but you do bring up an interesting matchup there in the Guardi versus Chen Pao, because I would say, yes, pretty heavily favored towards Chen Pao, being able to utilize Greninja, being able to utilize the Iron Hands. You're taking multiple ways to take those two prizes. So Chen Pao has a lot of things that I like, though. You have Bibarel for draw. Fantastic. Love that. You know, you're very much can play, you know, these take these multi prizes better than any other deck. You really prey upon the low HP Pokemon that your opponent might be running, and you can really stifle a setup before your opponent can even get going. And then if they do happen to get everything rolling, you just blow up their one dude, right? Or blow up their two dudes. Like, it's a really nice deck, has some consistency issues, but
yeah.
I think that is another one that we should absolutely see. I see that as a tier one deck in this format.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know what else is tier one, JW?
Let's hear it.
Manscaped products.
Absolutely. Manscaped. We are so thankful, Manscaped, that they are sponsoring the cast. Yeah, Manscaped. Ladies across the nation, this episode is brought to you by Manscaped and men, frankly. The brand that took our balls to space is now here to give them a grooming experience like no other. Introducing Manscaped's fifth generation performance package, including the all new Lawnmower 5.0. We talked about the 4.0 in the past. They have a new addition. So if you've liked any of the products, if you've tried the Lawnmower, there is a new addition out there that you can get your hands on and check out. Andrew, where can they go to get Manscaped products, and what code can they use to get a discount?
Manscaped.com, baby. It's where you're going to want to go to check out all of Manscaped's wonderful men's grooming options, including the new Lawnmower 5. I do not have the newest one, so I'm going to have to scope that out myself. You can use code TAGTEAM at checkout to get free shipping and
20% off.
20% off your order. Yeah, sorry. Still new to the cast. I haven't figured it out. Yes, 20% off, free shipping. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, especially with the holidays right around the corner. You can even give Manscaped as a gift to that, you know, to that man in your life who needs some professional grooming.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, this would be the perfect time for ordering to get your stuff before the holiday season. So head on over to manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM at checkout. 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast.
Yes, sir. So, Chen Pao Baxcalibur,
mm-hmm.
Guardi,
mm-hmm.
Roaring Moon.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of. I think I'm with you. Like that, I'm feeling less inclined to play Roaring Moon, because the more I think about it and the more I play it, it feels like a deck that's. It's trying to race your opponent down to the finish line, but it doesn't have any tricks to try and like upset that trade if you happen to stumble at all, where every yes. other deck in the format does have tricks to try and upset the trade, right? So like every other deck's got like Ionos or Paths or like something to like try and tweak a losing game back into your favor, where Roaring Moon has absolutely nothing to put a losing game back in your favor. If you just start losing, then you are losing, and that just it feels terrible, right?
Yeah, it's really hard to come back from that. Absolutely.
Whereas like Baxcalibur, and I have done a lot of hating on that deck. I have inconsistency issues. I feel like it. Oh my gosh, there's so many times where you just don't have the Irida. You don't even play Luminion in there. At least the Heavenly Kings of list had, you know, one of the lists had like a Pokégear in it. And I'm like, okay, well, at least there's one Pokégear in there. Like maybe you can like stop into the gear and then go find an Irida. But sometimes it feels like you're just trying to get lucky to draw into the Iridas, which just feels
Sure.
really bad. And then the Pokestop, not to mention just spinning the wheel of Pokestop, hoping that they're not too bad. Like,
Yeah.
there's a lot of feel bads. But I
But
get
I
it.
think it's very powerful. I think it's an
Very
extremely
powerful.
powerful deck. I think it's a tier one deck in this format. I think you got a lot of different tools you can utilize to swing matchups into your favor. I think it's just the deck right now. And it's pretty hard to counter, I would say, too. There's just a lot of things they can do. They have Snipe, they have the extra prizes, they can blow up anything. They have decent one prize options. Like, there's just a lot of things that Baxcalibur can do to make a game go in their favor. So I think it's a fantastic choice.
I think that yes, I agree. And yeah, and I think that one of the major selling points that it has, having played Roaring Moon quite extensively, and then also having toyed around with Baxcalibur a little bit, is that it can play this like I have a board full of single prizers and then could drop a two prizer and then utilize it instantly. Where a deck like Roaring Moon cannot just like swing a two prizer in, and then use it. It's like, no, the board is filled with them. So if your opponent wants to be the first one to take like a big significant knockout, they just can. Whereas, a deck like Baxcalibur, I could just go first and only play single prizers down, right? Then Roaring Moon does what? Attacks with a Roaring Moon. And then you come up with Baxcalibur, Chen Pao or whatever, and then blast it, and then you're winning the trade. So, because then you go 2-4-6 and it's game over. So it feels like Chen Pao has a lot more control over the board, being able to rely on just having Bibarel and Baxcalibur, which, are single prize Pokemon. Being able to control the game in that way seems very significant. But I think it's we've kind of done some good discussion about those kind of three, which I consider to be big hitters. I think Charizard is a deck that showed up in the Heavenly Kings tournament, but has not really showed up online yet. That it's just not doing well online,
Yeah. It's not
which
seeing a
susses me
ton of
out.
play. It does. Yeah, it does. I also view Charizard as being a solid deck somewhere in that low tier one, high tier two range. I think that it has those, like we talked about last format a lot, has those checkmate scenarios that are very hard for certain decks to get around. And I think that those scenarios become even more prevalent with the TM evolution. Being added to Charizard, that just smooths things out a lot. You don't need a two-card combo. You can kind of slowly work your way up to the Charizards, and that's a huge improvement in the deck, in my opinion, because you no longer have to play Pidgeot, which is often a liability on the bench, something that your opponent wants to knock out because it has a little less HP than a Charizard.
Right.
And now you're playing a Bivarel Engine, which I think is the best way to play it. I think Charizard's a great deck for the tournament. Takes very solid matchups across the board, I would say, and then can set up again these checkmate scenarios relatively easily.
Yeah, I think it's just a strong choice. I would definitely it's on my short list of decks to seriously consider for the event. Certainly I was very impressed by the Heavenly Kings list. And it's one that I'm continuing to kind of hammer out. It does feel really, I think maybe part of Charizard's downfall is that it has almost zero mobility and almost instantly loses to this Snorlax control deck, which is just feasting on these online tournaments. Now, the Snorlax control deck, I saw some takes on Twitter. I know Sander specifically said that the Snorlax control deck is so much stronger in an open deck list online tournament, when I can see exactly how many switch cards my opponent plays and then
Sure.
craft the perfect play to play around it, right?
Sure.
But in a blind deck list, 50-minute best of three scenario, does Snorlax stall show up? What do you think? Does Snorlax stall top eight this event? I think if it was going to be an
Yes.
online regional, you say yes. But
Oh,
for an
no,
international championship, you
I
think
think
yes?
Snorlax is tier one. I think Snorlax is tier one. You get too much from the new set. I mean, Countercatcher in and of itself is mind-blowingly good for
Yes.
the deck. And so I think you look at that as being the card that tips this archetype over the edge. I think it'll be fairly widely played. Obviously, stall archetypes, you have to be a specific type of player to play them and play them well. But
no friends, smelly.
Yeah, hopefully no stall players are listening to this right now. But I think it's a fantastic. I mean, it is tier one in my eyes, solely on the back of Countercatcher. And there's a few other cards that it gets as well. But
I can say that because I just released a video about it, you know, and it played the deck for 5 hours on stream the other day. So I can say that. But yes,
oh, okay.
No, it does take a certain kind of player to want to bring this kind of deck to an event where you're going to have to win a stressful 35, 40 minute game one and then like not really play game two or just get like donked game one and then just be freaking booking and hustling, you know, to try and tie.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Just to try and pull a tie, right? Because you cannot win a quick game. I mean, even like you played against Snorlax Stall. Yeah, in Toronto. And
that I did.
And you were able to, you lost a long game one and then you bopped them game two. They can never do that, right?
Yes.
Snorlax Stall will never be able to, they will never be able to make plays like that. So it's very stressful to play those stall decks because they can never just be like, I'm just going to like win a quick game two. They can never win a quick game two.
And
they can never do that.
There's a major benefit to not going to time, I think. Yeah. You know, so would I ever play stall in a tournament? Sure. But going to time every single round is a real mental strain on top of just your in-game decisions, of which you have dozens every turn with that deck. So I think it will show up. I think it's a tier one deck in my eyes. Countercatcher is insane for it. Luxurious Cape is great for it as well. And so I just see that being a very big presence at LAIC.
And I think we're starting to see why, you know, as we kind of go down the line and talk about all the different decks that could show up at LAIC, you can see why a deck like Mew VMAX can just slide under the radar with nobody teching for it, because you're like, oh, well, do I have to tech for Snorlax? Do I have
to tech for the Minior?
Do I have to play the Minior? Do I have to fit in a third switch into my deck just to have a chance, right? Or do I have to play Spiritomb for the one Mew VMAX I might play against? Or do I have to play a Drapion for the one Mew VMAX? And it's just like, you got all these different decks. Or do I have to account for Lovestone Box, which is still around here, you know, and still kicking? Do I have to play a Cheryl in my deck or something like that? Or do I have to play a Turo, you know, to try and heal? There are so many different tech options for decks now. And let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about, as we kind of continue cruising on through the different choices, Lawson. Lawson Giratina, is it real or is it fake?
I think this is a deck that's been higher performing online than it's been recently in person. But I will give Giratina a lot of credit in that it is the best path deck right now.
I think it's
the best path deck right now. Yeah. And so I think that means it's viable. Is it going to be a top three most played deck? Probably not. I think that it'll hover around that 5-6 area. And I don't think it'll see a great deal of success, just similar to how it was last format, where it was like, you would expect me to play one or two over the course of 15 rounds. But it was never in striking distance to win the tournament. And so that's, I kind of see it in that same vein. Does have a lot of matchups where a turn one path is incredible. And I think we'll see Giratina players really lean into that by playing a four count as well as a four count of the Giratina V, so that they can just Abyss Seeking while locking
path
with path.
Out.
And so I think that's going to be the way that a lot of players go. I don't see this as being, a kind of a world beater deck, but it'll show up. It'll do okay, but I don't think it'll be in striking range of winning the tournament.
I think that's a fine summation. I do think that, I mean, in Japan, they've been loving Lawsonia. I think it's the most successful deck over there, the most championship or the most, like, you know, equivalent of championship point awarding deck, according to Joe Omnipoke's stats that he just posted, and has been doing really well over there, gaining a lot of hype. One of the other big cards that Lawsonia gets is Countercatcher. That is kind of the big thing, because at the end of the game, I mean, Lost Tina kind of already had this strategy cooked up where it's pathing, it's disrupting at the end with Roxanne or Iono. Now it gets to add Countercatcher into that. I had a game stolen away from me on stream today where I was playing Rory Moon, I was routing them, it was a wash, and then I got Roxanne to two, pathed, and Countercatchered up a Pokemon with two. It was my Darkrai V because I was trying to establish Darkrai V star just to be able to like get the game winning play, right? They countercatchered up Darkrai V as a two retreat cost, and they knocked out something on the bench, and I was like, okay, I my third card, I didn't have the switch, so I had to attach and
Yeah.
pass, and then sure enough, they then go countercatcher again and won. You know,
Yeah, man.
it's just like, boom, there you go. It's a two-turn turnaround. Four prizes over the course of two turns because, you know, I just went countercatcher, path, lock. And that's crazy. And especially when you account Sableye into the equation.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could go Iono, path, countercatcher. You could disrupt Gust. And then with Sableye in the mix, you could pull up some really gnarly stuff with that. Because previously, you could not reliably Gust and disrupt in the same turn. And that's a tournament-winning strategy right there. You know,
That is true.
the decks that do that the best, do two supporter style effects at the same time. Decks like that can win tournaments. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. And I mean, Riley, that's how Riley won his regional championship with like Red Card and Hex Maniac at the same time. And Countercatcher. I'm pretty sure his deck played all of those. Yeah, I mean, it was nuts.
Yeah, no, it's a great strategy. I think Path, that's the best deck to utilize Path. And yeah, you get the countercatcher. You have one prize options to attack with. I mean, there's a lot going for the archetype. Just doesn't excite me that much. I'm open to being wrong on this one. This one feels like I could be just completely missing out, because as much as I think Countercatcher helps Gardevoir, I just for some reason I don't see it helping Giratina just as much, because you're loading up that two prizer to attack
I
at the end of the
think
game, whereas Gardevoir can stream those one prizers, so.
now I think we're going to have a lot of listeners. I certainly have had a lot of viewers on stream, you know, kind of asking me on my opinion, and I have been like kind of hard on Maridon lately, but I'm sure you, the regional champ, people want to know, what are your opinions on Maridon EX lightning type decks? In this format, where does it sit? Did it come down a peg? Did it stay the same, or did it go up a peg? And what are the best new cards for a Maridon deck? Is it Iron Hands or is it Tapu Koko EX?
Maridon came down a little bit. I would say that Roaring Moon being so prevalent has really hurt the deck. You can trade okay with it if you get going fast enough, but they're generally that, like, Roaring Moon generally would love to just play nine rounds against Maridon, because
Yes,
then
it would. That's its best
they can
deck. Yeah, it's the
execute
best
their
matchup.
2-2-2 strategy, right?
Yeah.
So Maridon for me is a fine choice. It's a fine, like, I don't want people to sit here and think he's off of Maridon, but I do think that it has been dropped down a peg just because Roaring Moon exists. You look at the rest of the matchups though, and I think they're fine. Like, Chen Pao historically has been a strong matchup for you, and that should increase in play. Gardevoir, from my experience, historically has been a strong matchup for you, and that should see an increase in play. Giratina Lost Box historically has been a good matchup for you, and that should see an increase in play. So there are some things that are working for Maridon and some things that are working against it. Roaring Moon kind of sucks. Goldango is not a matchup that I would like to see because the
No.
math is just really funky.
260? I'm not trying to do 260 like three
Yeah,
times.
exactly. And then
No.
Charizard is always going to be sus because you have to hit path the turn that they need to evolve, and they don't need to find a two-piece combo if they're evolving up through their Charmeleons. So I think Charizard's, kind of that terrible matchup. You have Roaring Moon, which can be slightly unfavored. Goldango, I don't like playing that matchup at all. But I suppose that you could get a timely path with an Iona or a Judge and can really shut them down. But all that said, I think if you're going to LAIC and you're thinking about Maridon, yeah, roll it. You're playing a little bit of the matchup lottery. Don't want to see Roaring Moon, but you have Tapu Koko, I think is a fantastic card for the deck.
I
I
agree.
think Iron Hands is okay, but you have to build your list around it. So if I were to play Iron Hands, I would play one Raihan and I play one double turbo. And that kind of is all your tech space for that deck. And just to be able to, on the turn you need it, get all your combo pieces out and get that Iron Hands going. Because what I see too often, and what's happened to me too often when playing Iron Hands and Maridon, is that you have to telegraph the play because you can't get enough energy on it in one turn to take the knockout that you need. And when you do that, then your opponent can either gust it up and knock it out, or they can put up a more favorable attacker into the active spot that you can't knock out. And it just really kind of is a waste of resources in most cases. So I've preferred the list that, basically from Toronto, my Toronto list with a Tapu Koko. But yeah. I think Iron Hands, if you figure it out, I think it's going to be Raihan. I think it's going to be double turbo. Again, just to get those attacks with Iron Hands up a little more, regularly, consistently.
I do like what Tapu Koko EX brings to the Maridon deck. It feels a lot like Pikachu and Zekrom Tag Team GX decks with, like, the Tandem Shock. I mean, how many games were won off of Tandem Shock, right? You stick a...
Basically every game.
Every single game, right? And so, and that's the thing is, with decks like Charizard, Mew VMAX, I mean, there's so many different big guys, Gardevoir EX even, so many different big guys who you are not necessarily able to unload 6 energy on with Raichu V every time you want to knock them out. That's just not always in the cards. So being able to Tapu Koko them and say, I'm going to give myself one more turn, I mean, and the math works out perfect. You're doing 120 paralysis, 220 is going to finish off anything else that you want. And that's unlike Iron Hands, which is this fat energy sink that you have to telegraph. You can at any point in the game pop down Tapu Koko, slide it into the active, Dynamotor wants attached, slide it in the active, paralysis, and now you've got this great momentum swing. I think someone in my chat said it best. They were like, dude, you were playing Flying Pikachu V with the hope of hitting paralysis sometimes. And going for
it. What if you could just automatically hit
it? What if it was guaranteed? Right, exactly. So I think that the Tapu Koko is like the card if you want to take Maridon as far as you can take it in this new format. Lean into that card. Lean into Path. Lean into Disruption. I feel like that's where Maridon lives right now. The second best Path deck is what I would say, And that's
agree.
Okay. That's an okay place to be because Path is still a good card.
It is. Yeah. And you still have a great turn one attack outside of Roaring Moon. It's among the best turn one attacks in the game. So I think I would be confident taking Maridon to a tournament just because it's a proven strategy in this last format. And, you do get that new Tapu Koko. I think that's quite good for the deck. So there's a few other archetypes that we should talk about. Lost Box, Lugia, and Goldango. Goldango being our newest archetype here, right alongside Roaring Moon from the new Paradox Rift set. So give me some thoughts on Goldango. I have some pretty strong opinions on Goldango, but I'm curious to hear where you're at.
At first, I did say that Goldango was going to top 8.
You did say that.
I take that back.
Yeah.
If I could just snatch that from the archives of the internet and delete it,
I think, and our viewers and listeners can prove me wrong, but I do feel like you said something along the lines of, and this will age well.
It won't. Listen, all right, you miss all the shots you don't take. Sometimes you got to shoot from the hip, go with your gut. Gut's not always right. So
didn't you also say Cloth was bad?
I owe you an apology for that.
Thank you.
I remembered that I owe you an apology for something, and it's because I told you to just basically, I told you that you were going off the deep end talking about Cloth. But Cloth is actually I would sooner bring Cloth to LAIC than Goldango.
I would agree. I think Goldango is just not good. I don't see Goldango as being anywhere approaching the power level of some of these other archetypes. And I think it goes back to what I was trying to tell you guys, because I think you and Riley, certainly you, seemed very excited about Goldango.
Oh, he's so cool.
He is very, I agree. And it's a fun deck. It's a really fun deck when it works. The problem is that you have your main attacker and you have your support in the same Pokemon. And you have Scizor, I guess, as your one prize option, but your opponent can play around that.
Yes, it can. And it can. Yeah.
And they do, right? And they do. Yeah. And it makes it really hard to force odd prizes. And if you ever, you know, happen to have Goldango in your prizes and you can't dig them out, or your opponent knocks out a quick, you know, takes a knockout or two very early in the game, it'd be really hard to set up your draw engine on top of getting an attacker because they're both Goldango. So I don't like the deck at all. I think it's like a tier 3 deck.
Tier 3, yep. So my original summation of Goldango is that it's just a more consistent Baxcalibur, and that's kind of what I was pushing, right? And then kind of what I envisioned for the deck. But as I've gotten to play more, I've realized that Goldango is actually just a less powerful and a less powerful Baxcalibur with a worse multiplier and more liabilities in play. So Baxcalibur, as I mentioned earlier in the cast, you can just kind of have a board full of single prizers and then splash down the Chen Pao when you are ready to take that big knockout. You just splash it down and go. With Goldango, you've always got to have a board full of Goldangos. And that's just pretty much what it is. That or you're not doing anything. You can attack with Scizors, maybe with just some, you know, Gimme Ghouls on the bench, but I've seen people cutting the Bibarel entirely, so they're not playing that. So the Goldango just is the draw engine now, which then also makes you very liable to Path and Roxanne and stuff like that. It's all bad when it comes to that. And I haven't found myself getting those big knockouts that I need out of Scizor. It's just kind of like an okay guy to lead versus Lost Box. And, like, hope your Guardy opponent doesn't attack till turn 4 or something, you know? But like, that's not happening. No, not a place you want to be. Cause if your Gardevoir opponent just wakes up before turn 3, like you're toast. Yeah. So it's, and the Scizor is never taking a knockout on like a Gardevoir EX or never taking a knockout on a two prizer cause they're never going to allow that. And then I think the big thing for me is the 50 multiplier. It's just 10 damage, right? But the 50 multiplier is so much worse than a 60 multiplier.
It's much, much worse.
I remember, like, 7. I need 7. It's basically 8 because you need the one on the Goldango, and then you need 7 more to knock out anything significant. And these Pokemon only give up 2 prizes now. It's not like every one of them's a Mew VMAX where you're taking half the games. Like, if I have to summon 2 7 prize knockouts in a game, like, all right, maybe. But, like, when you're up against Pokemon like Gardevoir and stuff like that, or you're just like, these numbers ain't math, and I would much rather do Chen Pao with 6,
sure,
than do Goldango with 7. So I've softened on Goldango quite a bit. I think it's fine. Thank goodness. I know. I think it's fine, but for me, it's not it.
I think it's tier 3 deck. There's a couple others, holdovers, Lugia and Lost Box. I think we should talk about those. I think Lost Box, fine play, very strong play, still remains good. The strategy is always going to be strong, I think, until it rotates. I think this is going – if you have your practice with Lost Zone and you're going to LAIC or you're going to tournaments in this new format, I think you should be confident that is a deck that is going to reward skilled players playing.
Yep.
And it's going to be very good for this tournament just because you have a lot of these carryover archetypes that you already had good matchups into, and I think you take pretty strong matchups into the – Paradox Rift archetypes, Roaring Moon and Goldango, because they are very two prize focused, and you can take advantage of that. Lugia. Where do you see Lugia sitting in this format? I kind of like it. I think it has pretty even matchups across the board. It's not a deck I would touch personally, but you know, Lugia could win LAIC, and I don't think I'd bat an eye.
It hurts me to say this, but Lugia with the Iron Hands is not bad. Oh, God. And it just seems so bad. You're like, you're telling me Lugia? And I'm going to play basic energy? And I'm going to play these earthen vessels? And Archaeops can't even accelerate basic energy. And this
That's
is
why
what
you have
we're
the earthen
doing?
Vessels.
Yeah. But when you really break it down, it's just like Lugia kind of just is this It's this amorphous deck. It can just be whatever it wants to be. It accelerates energy wherever from the deck, wherever you want it to go, right? So Lugia is just the catalyst that can make expensive attacks work. And it's just one of the best accelerators and one of the best engines in the game at making expensive attacks work. Keep in mind, Lugia V-Star's attack costs four colorless energy. I mean, it costs a ridiculous amount of energy. So, when it comes to looking at Iron Hands, which most decks look at Iron Hands and are like, no. Even Mirrodin looks at Iron Hands and is like, that's pretty much not happening, unless I like very much telegraph the play. Unlike all of those other decks, Lugia looks at Iron Hands and is like, that's no problem, like whatever, dude, like just
Sure.
three colorless energy, yeah, I got that right here, and shoot, there they are.
Yep,
So like
exactly.
when you start thinking of it that way, like you could just play whoever. I mean, and that's what Lugia decks have historically been. They have just been. I mean, back when Aurora Energy was in standard, I mean, they just were powering up whatever attack. It didn't matter if it was like, amazing Yveltal or amazing Raikou or whatever. You could power that attack up. And I think Iron Hands just is like kind of the new guy who hits the right numbers against single prize decks, and it's just a new tool for Lugia to take advantage of. I don't think that Lugia is the most exciting new deck, which is probably why a lot of people aren't playing it. But if you're a real Lugia head and like you love Lugia, then like slap an Iron Hands in there, a couple Earthen Vessels, maybe a Radiant Charizard, and go laugh your way all the way to the bank. You're gonna do just fine. I think it's still a fine deck. It is stronger than I'd like to admit, because I don't particularly love it, but it is it's solid. And you don't have to worry about Mirrodin nearly as much as you used to. So that's kind of
No,
nice.
you
Yeah.
definitely do not.
No, you do not. So I think that kind of feels like the format in a nutshell.
Yeah, there's again, that's about 10 decks that we talked about, right?
That's what it's wide. Yeah.
And it is a very wide format, and there is still a lot to explore. I would say that there's a lot of little card decisions and deck decisions that I think players will come out with at LAIC. I think there's a lot of creativity that we still have left in the format. It'll be really exciting. I'm stoked because I know you're going to do well, Andrew. This
Oh,
is going to be
thank you.
your breakout
Thank you.
performance. I know. What are
Thank
you going to
you.
take?
What am I
What are you
going
going
to
to?
take?
Yeah.
Okay. I've said this before on stream. I was like, all right, decks that I could seriously consider for LAIC. Chen Pao, Baxcalibur, Charizard, Gardevoir, Mew VMAX. That's my short list right now. I would like if I had to pack like four decks with me, those would be it. So it's gonna be a lot of grinding this weekend and a lot of seeing like which one of those is like clicking the best. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm like seeing the vision. This is like the deck that I'm like really, feeling confident with.
You're gonna fly across the world to sling.
Yes. Yeah. It's got to be whichever one of those decks is speaking to me this weekend. It'll probably be the deck that I take. I don't think that I'll leave it up to the hotel room. But then again, I mean, it
Try not to.
depends.
I mean, it's so tough though, because you're like,
Yeah.
oh, what about this? What about this? But I think that, yeah, it would behoove you. I
Yeah.
mean, at least I'm trying to do this as much as I can, is just make my decision early and then tweak my deck as I see fit, as opposed to like shifting decks completely the night before. So.
Exactly. Exactly. So probably one of those. There's a lot of a concerning amount of stage twos on that list, but that's fine.
That's, where we got our start.
Yes, it is. It is. Part of me is like, you know what? Maybe
How
it's
full
time to join
circle? Yeah, how full
the
circle would it be?
Baxcalibur
Baxcalibur.
army.
Yep. Exactly, man.
Yeah, maybe it's time to come back full circle, to quit hating, and
Time to come backs.
Yeah, time to come backs to backs. Yeah. But
So.
we'll see how it goes. And I won't be with you guys next week because I will be in Brazil. So I trust you and Raleigh to hold down the fort next week. And I appreciate
Absolutely.
you all listening to the cast. I will be streaming my final days before I leave for Brazil. So wish me luck while I'm there.
Godspeed, absolutely, Andrew. We can't wait to see how you do. I think it's going to be a great tournament. And I mean, first time in Brazil, so make sure you, I don't know, eat at a steakhouse or go to a, I don't know, beach or something. I don't know what they do down there.
I'll do something.
Yeah, do something
I'll do
fun.
Stuff.
Do something local. Have a good time. Yeah. Take a few pictures. Send them to me and your parents
we'll
and
do.
Stuff. Yeah. So that's the cast, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to get more plugged into what we do here on the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast, you can find us on Twitter, now known as X, at Tag Team Pokemon for the cast. Follow us there. You can also follow me at Real John Walter, at Andrew at Enjoy Friend, and our missing co-host today, Riley Hulbert at Smiles with Riles.
All right. Y'all take it easy and have a great day. We'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.